From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour is found all throughout downtown Rochester. Larry and Jane Glazer have left a lasting impact on the city, and their tragic loss on Friday has shocked our region. But their work is unfinished in many ways. While investigators continue to search for the Glazers' plane, which went down off the coast of Jamaica, we're looking at their remarkable legacy. And we're trying to answer your questions this hour that we've been getting for the last several days about what happens next with some very significant projects. Now, a little bit of housekeeping notes. This is was supposed to be really a day of celebration on this program. We're very proud to announce our launch simulcasting today going forward on WRUR 88.5. And if you're listening on 88.5, we're so glad that you are. This is a program that, as I've described it in the past, if you listen to a week, 10 hours of Connections, it hopefully is a little bit like an audio version of a New Yorker magazine. You get a lot of politics, policy, but arts, entertainment, music, culture, and agriculture at the end of a week. But unfortunately, sometimes it includes dealing with loss and tragedy, and it's been a very rough 5 days in the city, culminating with the loss of Larry and Jane Glazer on Friday. This hour, we're looking at what it means for all of us. And our guests for the hour, Heidi Zimmermeyer, the president of the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. Heidi, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And we're going to have Del Smith in just a moment join us. Del's the commissioner of the Department of Neighborhood and Business Development for the city of Rochester. If you want to join the program, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. I should also say that Larry and Jane had three kids, and they have been grieving privately, as you can imagine. We are not pushing them to make statements, to come on the program right now. They will do that whenever they feel ready, if they feel ready. And so we'll go ahead and try to address what we can. Heidi's not here to speak for the family. Heidi's here to speak for Rochester Downtown Development. But in so many ways, the Glazers were part of so much of what you do.
There's no question. I mean, since I first began doing this work in downtown Rochester 30 years ago, Larry has been on the scene, involved in starting out very small projects and now escalating to the point where his fingerprints on the landscape of this community are significant, and the bold moves, the vision that he was exhibiting, and what has already been put in motion with Buckingham Properties is nothing short of stunning and very huge force in what's helping to reshape the future of this place. So for us, all of us who've worked with him, and we could pack this entire building with people who are in mourning over the loss of this man, it's unfathomable.
Let me also tell our audience that Larry and Jane were philanthropic, and in many ways they did a lot of great work together, but they had separate companies, and a lot of this hour we're going to focus on Buckingham Properties, Larry's work. That is not to exclude or minimize the remarkable work that Jane did. I mean, Heidi, I assume you worked a lot more with Larry just because of the nature of Buckingham Properties, but Jane, a lot of people might not have realized, that was a remarkable success in her own right.
She was phenomenal, and I had the privilege a few years back of going through her entire operation for part of an afternoon with an Israeli business person, and it was the first time I'd seen how her whole business was set up and constructed, and I have to tell you, I was blown out of the water. Absolutely brilliant. And again, growing these are two people that didn't have to work so hard. They didn't have to. They just got such pride in creating something, creating value and jobs and commerce and real estate, both of them, not to mention all the philanthropic work. They were both really phenomenal human beings. And, you know, we're I think many of us are reeling, and of course, questions immediately come up. The family's going to be dealing. They've got a very tough road. Not only losing both parents on one day, grandparents as well, but the family in their companies. They've got many, many people who've been very involved with both companies, and knowing how to move what was built by these two remarkable people forward as we wake up and realize we've had an earthquake and the landscape has changed. And so I think the next months are going to be very, very tough, and I think it's going to take a lot of determination and grit on the part of family members as well as the leadership underneath these two remarkable people in their companies. And I, you know, there are many questions, obviously, and the families and the people involved in each company are going to need to be given some time to figure out how to move everything forward. It's very tough.
Yeah, you don't answer that question overnight.
No.
You don't answer it in a week. But, you know, and hopefully when Del Smith gets here, we can talk just about what some of the questions the city has. And we're trying to address all this as sensitively as we can. We're not trying to, you know, overdo emotion, et cetera. But I do have to ask you, Heidi. I mean, in this building Friday, it was the most surreal day I've ever remembered at a workplace.
I have to say the same was true on our end.
I mean, did you, you probably knew before even the plane went down who was on it, and it was, what goes through your mind? For us, it was just, this can't be real.
We're just emerging from being in shock, and we're not even related to these two people. That there were so many of us who worked very closely with them, in my case more with Larry, on all these incredible projects that have made such a huge difference in what I do every day and what matters to me about the growth of the city, at least in part. And it's, I think we were just in shock and not believing that this was happening, but the calls kept coming in from, you know, television station in Naples, Florida, and from CNN and from Buffalo and Syracuse and, you know, clearly all around our region. And so we were hearing all day long updates from people in the media saying, this is what we're hearing, this is what we're tracking. And we were just stunned. And, you know, terribly deep emotion on our end because of our relationship with him and with the people that work with him. I will tell you this, that one thing is worth noting, and that is that speaking specifically about Buckingham Properties, is that that company has been strengthened pretty significantly internally below Larry in the last 2 or 3 years, to my understanding. And it's very difficult transition when you have a founder and somebody who's as brilliant and visionary as Larry was. You know, how do you build the structure under you that can carry that legacy on in the worst possible scenario? And they're far stronger today than they were 2 or 3 years ago. So I think that's a very positive thing. But it's going to be a very tough road for them. I know all of us that are focused on urban development, this is a very difficult time because of the visionary work that he was engaged in. And you know, it's so interesting as we roll through our views of all this in this hour. When you look at how somebody is constructed and what drives what they do, it's a very remarkable and inspiring case when you look at Larry Glaser, because here's a guy that could have sat back and done very little. He could have rested on a lot of projects that he'd done. He had left downtown at one point, probably 10 or 15 years ago, saying, boy, this is dead, and then began to come back and buy buildings and make investments. But he took on very tough projects, and at some point, and I've been watching this for 30 years in our particular community, you recognize that unless somebody big comes in and says, I'm going to be the first big one to jump in this pool, you can't move a community forward out of what so many American cities, mid-sized particularly, have been experiencing in the last half century. And it's because of Larry. It's not that we don't have a lot of other developers that have been brilliant and done remarkable work. We do. But Larry is the big one who came in and said, I'm going to take huge chunks of this that no one else will touch. I believe it can work. I believe the market is ready. And he just kept creating gold with everything he touched. And in doing that, he not only took building by building back and breathed life, but he ended up changing the entire environment within which those buildings sit. And so that's, when we talk about legacy, that's part of what Larry did for this community, was this deep belief, this optimism, this feeling that all it was going to take was someone who believed and was willing to do the tough projects, and that would start to really reshape the marketplace. And by God, he was doing it. And he had such an impact. So, you know, there's a clear legacy. Obviously, there are many questions going forward. There was so much in motion, very big, you know, two very big projects in particular, the Midtown Tower project and Alexander Park. But he's got such an infrastructure in that company already in place, so that so much of the taking care of the assets that they had brought into the company, the leasing, the maintenance, the management of an incredible portfolio. That's all in place with that company. And it's the development side, the visionary part that's, I think, an opportunity for so many people inside, particularly the ones at the top, to step into those shoes and move it forward. But it's going to be very different without them.
Heidi Zimmermeyer, my guest right now, the president of the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. We're gonna look at sort of a progress report as best we can on Midtown Tower, Alexander Park, and some other things as we go forward. But we should also say that, Larry Glazer and Buckingham did not take on easy slam dunks.
You bet.
And there was plenty of controversy at times. And I always thought, and said this on Twitter on Friday, even if you disagreed with some of his ideas, you could not doubt his sincerity. You could not doubt his belief.
His ability to execute.
His track record,
stunning.
Right?
I mean, we track all of the office buildings in downtown Rochester. There's some 111, 112 office buildings. We've been tracking them since 1984. And I have to tell you, it is remarkable to me to watch what happened when he bought a property that had been largely vacant. And that's also true for the residential properties that he bought. He was able to strike deals to fill buildings. There was something kind of wholesome and optimistic and very savvy about the way he went about
Give
this.
Give us an example or two.
Monroe
that we may
Square,
not know yeah.
the old what was old Rochesterville project. Monroe Square used to be the old Sears building on Monroe Ave, which is, it's a decent property, but it's not a gorgeous property in and of itself. And yet the way Larry and his company managed it and the way they put their deals together, they filled it, and nobody thought that was possible. When he took over the old Rochesterville project up in St. Paul Quarter, they bought that, and at that time it was probably maybe half occupied in its residential. Those were some of the early lofts that were created downtown. And within months of his company taking that property over, and that's a big, it's a big one up along the river, it was full. And he filled commercial space. When he did the Michael Stern building, the same thing. It was a very difficult property, and he ended up filling not only the residential space, which was easier, but the commercial space. At one point he said, geez, if I'd known it would be this successful, I would have made more commercial floors. This is at a time when other buildings were losing tenancy. And the same thing was true for the Artcraft Optical Building, which is now called Buckingham Commons. And that's another one that nobody thought was going to be possible, and yet he broke all the real estate expectations and filled that building too. It's just, he just had an instinctive understanding of how the market works and also how to do these projects. Anything where he converted, a building into residential units, he understood what the hunger was in the marketplace. He just really hit it every time. And then their leasing and their support once you're in their buildings is very high, so they have happy tenants. And it's a formula for true success. And it's not an easy story. This is about hard work. It's about, taking risks. It's about understanding and going after that last thing that you're not sure what it's going to be like in a building and just sweating all those details. He just never gave up, and he always kept pushing every last ounce into each property. And I'll tell you, it shows. And where other properties have had, not residential, because that's doing very well downtown, but the commercial spaces, we've had some struggles in our market down here. And it's been very reflective of the regional economy, which has been, taking its lumps in the last decade. And he's just managed to fill building after building after building. And it's just brilliant.
He was also very accessible. I mean, I think it was Tom Tobin who wrote a piece in the DNC this weekend about how Larry would answer the phone himself, and reporters aren't always used to that. Last time I talked to him was the Thursday of the first week of my show in January. Mayor Lovely Warren was on, and she sort of talked very briefly about an idea of a downtown water park. And a lot of people said, "What? What's going on with that?" And she kind of hinted that there could be a developer in play, and so a lot of people said, "Is that Larry?" I call Larry. He answers his cell phone. And I said, "Where are you?" He said, "I'm in the Dominican Republic. The reception may not be great here." I said, "How are you even answering your phone?" He said, "Well, I don't know." He answers his phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, he always did.
Very accessible guy.
Very accessible guy. And so here on Twitter, if you want to join the conversation, by the way, here's Mark on Twitter saying, "This conversation is making me so sad again. Who are the people who can fill Mr. Glazer's shoes?" Again, we don't necessarily know. And it may be within the family. And again, we're doing our very, very best to kind of give that family the space and not put the pressure on them to say, you know, a child loses a parent. No one knows if a child wants to try to step into that void or whatever. I mean, they're going to make their own decisions. But even outside of Buckingham, Heidi, are there people who come to mind who will have significant roles now?
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's something that I've been thinking about quite a bit in the last few days, that it's funny sometimes how when you have someone who is so had such a high level of impact on everything, somebody who was so large scale in their in what they were doing to try and change the environment. And you wonder sometimes whether we all began to rely too heavily on Larry, instead of saying, well, Larry will come in and fix it. Larry's going to, we just need to talk to Larry. We've got to get him interested in that property. He'll come in and save it. And that means the rest of us don't have to step up the same way. Not that we don't have a lot of developers that have done that. They have. But in the scale, on the scale that Larry did it, and maybe with the same level of kind of big optimism, you know, I wonder now whether, because he's gone, that we're going to see other people that you know that you least expected step into that void and begin to create a different kind of leadership. And I guess I'm eternally optimistic, and I also believe that we have some pretty incredible people, not only within the Glazer family, but within his company and with a lot of other of our developers who've done some pretty brilliant work also. So I think what Larry, the biggest legacy he's left is the sense that projects can happen in our community, that we are turning around, that there is opportunity, that these projects can make money and can do well and can revive the city. And he's done it again and again. And I think that in and of itself has changed people's attitudes. So I think people will step into the void, and we don't know how that's going to happen yet over the next few years. But I think it will happen.
You mentioned some of the bigger projects. What's priority one? Once things settle down and we have to figure out what happens with some of these big projects, for you, what's the biggest question outstanding going forward?
Well, I think clearly the Midtown block, and you know, you've got the tower project, which was big and a very difficult building, by the way, very difficult project, and I know that there was a lot of blood, sweat, and tears spent on putting together how that would move forward, not only on Buckingham's end, but on the city's as well, very, very difficult. But Larry had a vision for more on that block, and he began to see the way the market is turning, with the number of people now living downtown, with the ability to start talking about retail for the first time, with some of the feedback that he told me he was getting on the retail end, was a different story than what we've seen here for the last 25 or 30 years. So I think that one is going to be the most challenging right now. Everything else probably, in terms of new development, the Alexander Park and the like, that's new construction, and that was phased, and parts of it have already been completed, but the new construction that's scheduled, you know, that'll be a big push for the company. But I think probably most important to the community is going to be where the Midtown Tower and the Grove, you know, the Grove at Midtown, part of that which spilled out into the part of the rest of the block, where that will stand and how that will move forward, I think is a big one. So I would put that as number one. I think all the others, the Bausch & Lomb is an issue of leasing. There are other partners involved in that too. And I think that one will percolate and move along. Xerox Tower is obviously in good shape. All of the other properties. And Larry, by the way, we're tracking in the downtown area alone. Buckingham Properties owns, or at least is in an ownership partner role, of 40 different projects. Properties, 40. And some of them are different parcels connected to one project. But there was a tremendous impact in terms of just the sheer volume of property owned. So of all of those that we're familiar with, I would say probably the Midtown Tower and then the Grove at Midtown piece of that, I think, probably our number one.
When it comes to Midtown, I don't want you to share any conversations that were private, but I'm curious because so many people were cynical about Midtown and the chances there. What did Larry tell you about his thoughts on Midtown?
You know, it's wrapped up in his thoughts about the residential market in particular. He was the most bullish of any of the developers, and we have had a lot of developers both in town and some from other places like Boston and New York City and the like that have seen value in our growing residential market and made investments here in the last, say, since the year 2000. And so there's a long story about that. But I've always been compelled by what Larry said about the depth of the housing market. And I think his views were far more bullish is the best word I can think of, and optimistic, and I think matched most closely what we've been hearing from demographers, which is that in downtowns clear across the U.S., there's a huge demographic bubble right now, and it's going to go through 2025, if not later. And many of us and many people nationally are now saying that this is the century of the city. So it's more than just demographics. It's about a culture shift in the U.S. And his feeling was that we have room for 10,000 people living downtown, and we're now up over 6,000. So, and his projects would have advanced that to a significant degree. We got another 2,000 probably moving in with the projects, including his, that were in the pipeline, residential projects. So I think that's probably the most significant piece I would put on the table, is that his sense of how much our market could absorb here in Rochester was very aggressive. And so far, he's been proved right with every single project that's hit the market.
And to that end, you worry about what comes next. David on Twitter says, don't mean to be negative, but could this be the end of that Midtown project?
I hope not. I think there's so much of a head of steam right now within the Buckingham Properties organization and with the city of Rochester, and we got to let the dust settle and let them all figure out how to move it, and they'll have to decide how much they're moving forward of that, all of it or part of it. But I would be surprised if at least the tower didn't move forward. But you know, I don't have any inside information. I just believe that so much had been thought through on Larry's part as to how to do this, and he has a very, you know, very bright team, including his sons, working in the company. And so I think they have the opportunity to do that, and just have to see how this all settles. It's a very difficult time for them.
But to be clear, and this only makes it harder, Larry and Jane were 68. Sometimes people of who are of that age, which certainly isn't elderly, but sometimes you start to pull back, or you know, you enjoy the fruits of your labor a little bit. Larry was still so involved, wasn't he, Heidi?
He was very hands-on.
As much as you said that he did, the structure underneath him has improved in recent years. He was still very hands-on.
He's very passionate about it. I think that you know, we all have known people in our lives when they stop the work that they're passionate, they love doing, and then you see them just decline as you know, when you get much older. And Larry is the kind of guy that I would expect would stay in the saddle as long as he was physically able to do that. He had a real love for the work. It wasn't a job. It wasn't just a business. It wasn't about making money, although, you know, obviously you don't stay in business unless you focus to some degree on that. But for him, it was a real passion. And that's the thing that I always found so energizing about him, is that each project was like a jewel for him. And it was the intrinsic value of it that drove him as much as anything else. And so, you know, for them, I mean, obviously succession planning and the like in any company, and I imagine they have given that considerable thought. But as you get older, you do have to think about that. But I would not, had this not happened, barring any other health issues, I would have been surprised if he'd stepped down anytime soon.
Heidi Zimmermeyer is the president of the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. We're talking about the tragic loss of Larry and Jane Glazer in that airplane accident on Friday. And then the questions now about what goes forward for downtown, the remarkable legacy that they leave, but also the questions about projects going forward. Before we get to a break, Heidi, I want to ask you a question that we've talked about on this program before, but you know, we've got listeners on many different channels now, all the way to Ithaca and throughout the Finger Lakes and halfway to Buffalo and Syracuse. And there may be people who don't spend a whole lot of time in downtown Rochester, or they may be familiar with some of the projects you're bringing up, but not all of them, et cetera. And they may not know very much about the Glazers. But we've talked about why any of us in this region ought to want to see downtown succeed. How would you frame the Glazers in the to someone who, say, you're living in the Finger Lakes? I don't really know too much about Rochester. Why does this matter to them?
I think Larry in particular, and it, both Larry and Jane were incredibly philanthropic. So that side, you know, there are many people that can speak far more eloquently about that than I can. I just know that they were. But in terms of the downtown development part of this, Larry understood very deeply how you can't be a suburb of nowhere. You can't be a regional outlying community of nothing. And that his so much of his work over his career was within the city limits, and then in the last decade or so, so much within the center core of that. He just believed deeply in how important, how critical it was for the whole region that the downtown part of it and the urban part of it be strong and be vibrant. And he traveled a lot. You know, he's been quoted, but, you know, I've talked to him about this on occasion as well. When he'd come back from someplace and say, my God, they're doing a great job down in Lakeland, Florida, or Seattle. Yeah, you really ought to take a look at what they're doing. They've got something really interesting down there in their downtowns. He was constantly thinking and watching and looking and exploring how to do this, because he recognized that without a strong core, that the region is much weaker. And he's an upstate guy and felt very much a responsibility to do what he could to strengthen that.
But I also get the sense that he was very good at looking at a Seattle or a Lakeland and a Rochester and saying, it's not necessarily perfect apples to apples, and yet he could find a way to say, this could work on this scale here, this could work here, and this could be appropriate downtown.
And it's about challenging the community. I mean, if all we do, and we Rochesterians, we know this. We're very good at saying, well, you know, the weather's lousy and the water's dirty. And, you know, well, we tried that 100 times and
it
didn't
work. We're
not
a big enough city. We can't do that.
We can't. You know, we're not New York. We're not, you know, we're very good at leaving opportunity on the table. And Larry was the opposite of that. He was, well, why can't we try this? Why can't we find a way to make that work here? You know, why shouldn't we be more like that? If you look at Seattle or any number of other places 10, 15, 20 years ago, they weren't what they are today either. So when do we start that turnaround? And he was about making that turnaround happen now. And so that's part of what we're all talking about today is that.
All right, short break now on Connections. Coming back with Heidi Zimmermeyer, the president of the Rochester Downtown Development Corporation. If you want to join the program, here's the number toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Many of us still in shock, but trying to look for the way ahead and trying to find some optimism with leaders like Heidi. More with her coming up next. Stay with us. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and Heidi Zimmermeyer, do you remember, sometimes you remember, sometimes you don't, a first conversation or your first impressions of Larry Glazer?
Boy, that was a long time ago. One of the things that sticks out, which I think is humorous, he owned the Cox Building, which is now, by the way, there's a New York City developer that's looking at converting that to housing. But at that time, it was an office building.
And where is that?
It's on St. Paul, street, and it's in the St. Paul Quarter. It's kind of in between the new transit center and the buildings that are on Main Street. And he owned that, and at one point he got out of it. He said, this is just, you know, I'm getting out of downtown. He was very discouraged and very unhappy with the way the economy and the market were moving. And it was, you know, we went through several decades here of a lot of movement out of the city, businesses, housing, and the like, office parks being built in suburban areas, and it drained for a long period of time companies out of the city. And so he got very depressed by that, still was doing some very interesting projects within the city limits, but it wasn't until he came back, but it was and kind of viewed the market very differently and began seizing opportunities and becoming such a huge player. That happened much later. But I think that was one of my first experiences with him, was over that building and his feeling that, you know, that's it, I'm out. You know, and so it was funny that happened, and then it turned around completely for him some decades later.
Cynthia on Twitter is asking, you said you've been talking about Midtown. You mentioned something about Alexander Park. Could you tell us about that? Heidi, can you explain a little bit?
Yeah, Alexander Park is actually phenomenal. For those of you, you know, all of us Rochesterians, remember that the Genesee Hospital used to be on that whole site, and then there were some buildings on the Monroe Avenue piece of what is now called, quote, Alexander Park. And Larry ended up, after the hospital closed, ended up negotiating for quite a long time to try and work a deal to buy that. It was very complicated with the decommissioning of the hospital and all the rest, from what I understand. And he ultimately did end up becoming the owner of that. And a good portion of the hospital, almost all of it, was actually demolished. And then it turned out that he created this multi-phased plan to use the big hospital parking garage, keep the office buildings that housed medical uses, and to fill them better than they were when he took it over. And then he built some new buildings. He brought Earthlink in, and he built another building, and Rochester General Hospital moved a whole imaging department into that, which is the first time we've had a major move in to this part of the city of a medical use like that. And then he built a small Canandaigua National Bank branch there. And those were the phases, the early, I think, phases one and two were the stabilizing of that portion, that kind of south portion of the property. And then the last big phase, which was also multi-phased within that, was what's more loosely called a lifestyle center, where you have mixed uses like housing and retail and office and maybe even some public space, streets and maybe a little park, parking garage, that kind of thing, and had selected an architect to put together multiple buildings on that. It's about almost 8 acres, I think, between Tracy, and it's bordered by Tracy and Averill and Alexander. And so that was was scheduled to begin its first phase in, I believe, this year was the last I'd heard, 2014, to start some new construction on that site. So that was a big, big, gutsy project, and they'd been very successful with the first two phases. Very successful, everything filled.
You've made a very important point about the fact that a city can't be, well, you know, I say can't. We don't have a whole lot of track records for big regional models where there's not a downtown core and it becomes all suburban and it kind of goes farther and farther away from a center city, and Larry appreciated that. Do you look around the country and are there sort of cautionary tales for cities that have sort of collapsed a little with their downtowns that have struggled that way, or you know, I mean, every kind of municipality is different, but are there cautionary tales that you see?
There are hundreds of cautionary tales. And one of the biggest ones is not to miss the opportunity when the pendulum starts swinging back. And that's one thing that I have to say. Larry captured that concept early, but others have too. We've had a lot of redevelopment. Just since the year 2000, we've got 39 buildings downtown that have been converted to residential. 39. That's phenomenal.
But how are they doing?
They're full. They're full. The market has soaked up the residential units like that in almost every single case. And there have been a couple of them in breaking new territory areas, which have taken a little bit longer, but they're still doing very well. So I think the biggest cautionary tale is not to sleep through a change in culture And it's in the U.S., you know, we have a very American story about the way our cities and our regions develop, very American. It's not been that way in Europe or Asia or even Canada, and certainly not some of the other continents. And our story has been we spent about 60 years in the last century building farther and farther out, just taking greenfield after greenfield. And we can do it. We have a lot of land in this country. And it was easier and cheaper to build on greenfields. And now we have a very different mentality and psyche about where the center of gravity is in regions. And many people are saying this is the century of the city. And Larry picked up on that early. And so I think the cautionary tales are to take a look at the kinds of things that work. For example, if you build or renovate a project downtown and you make it suburban, you're going to blow it. That what people want is something that's singularly different. If you try and sanitize the environment in a downtown like ours, you're going to make a huge, colossal mistake.
What do you mean by sanitize?
I mean, it's not all about homogeneity, either in your structures and buildings or in the people that occupy them. Downtowns are hotbeds of kind of vibrancy, frictional environments, dynamism, energy. They're like that because they involve so many different kinds of people and different uses and things jammed up next to each other. And it's not a neat, clean, simple picture. It's about all different sorts of things kind of colliding in an environment. And it creates a kind of energy that's attractive to innovation companies and creative class businesses and artists and students. And in Rochester's case, wealthy retirees and mid-career professionals and executives. So you got to recognize what it is that's driving the value in the marketplace and not throw that baby out with the bathwater. That's where somebody like Larry was so visionary, because he saw that early and he recognized the formula that needs to be understood.
And he didn't give up when things got really rough in 2008, 2009, 2010
no.
either.
No, actually it was shocking how much he kept pushing forward. But on the other hand, he was watching what was happening inside our region. We didn't get hit as hard as a lot of other cities in this country got hit. And because we're not a boom-bust kind of a real estate market here, you know, you're not going to make a million overnight, but you're not going to lose a million either. So if you're steady eddy about it, if you watch closely what the trends are, if you listen to the market, if you're savvy and smart about the way you make your investments and about how you design your projects, you will do well. But demographics has a lot to do with it, the appetite in the marketplace for certain kinds of things. And, you know, there are many memorable moments, obviously, with someone like Larry, who was iconic. But one of the ones that I remember with more affection than probably most is his walking me through the Michael Stern building when he was finishing up his redevelopment of that. And it became so clear that it was the love of the building and the process and the creating beauty out of something that had been dead and people had given up on it.
He was animated about it?
Oh, my gosh. He just lit up. And it was the first time I realized more what drove him, and that it was a real passion about the actual work to do this, about the breathing life into something, about the preserving these unique one-of-a-kind details about buildings and about the spaces and recognizing the context as being something special. He just had such a powerful view like that. And frankly, I think it's part of what drove his success, in addition to being a very savvy businessman, clearly.
Got a couple more interesting questions from listeners. And first, here is an email from a longtime listener, John, who says, I'm too depressed to call and I don't want to defend it. Don't want to offend anybody, excuse me. But he says, can your guest share her thoughts or comment on what Mr. Glazer might have thought about the government's role in new developments? Now, Heidi's not here to speak for Larry Glazer, who we lost on Friday, but it's an interesting question. Did you have conversations with him about the government's role and any thoughts on that?
Yeah, we did. And also in our boardroom, we've had many discussions about that. And I think his belief was, I think there were two pieces of that answer to that question. One is that he believed deeply in the intrinsic, the numbers had to work on a project, and that if you did your project well and you watched the market and you were careful and you bought well, you shouldn't need a lot of subsidy. And so that was kind of an overriding sense. On the other hand, he also recognized that if you're going to do tough urban projects, you have a set of inhibitors to success which make it much more complicated to make numbers work. And it depends on what you want as a community. I mean, you know, government works for the community, right? So it depends on what the community wants. If your feeling is no, you know, the government shouldn't be sparking any kind of investment, the government should leave that in private hands, then that's one point of view. But if you recognize that you have two choices, either you fill buildings and bring life back into a city in an environment that's very difficult to develop sometimes.
And expand the tax base.
Or you say no subsidy and you just let buildings go vacant. And we were at a phase in our city where if you didn't spark some of this, you weren't going to find some of these projects moving forward. But Larry did a lot of this, you know, with minimal government support. Although in the Midtown block, it was a much tougher deal. I don't think you can do that without... You just can't make the numbers work. It's too complicated a deal.
Let me grab a call. This is Carlene in Rochester. Go ahead, Carlene. Thanks for calling.
Yes, on that same line, the thing is when you have a visionary like Larry, it takes decades before the city fathers, et cetera, give you the recognition and respond to your requests the way they need to. You almost have to be a made man, so to speak, before they even listen, because... bureaucrats in government are not visionaries and developers, so they have no heart for grand plans. And they've killed so many projects over the years that it takes a true optimist and business person like Larry to go forward. But what I'm concerned about is hopefully his children and the people in his organization share the same dream, but will they receive the same needed recognition by the bankers, by the politicos that so often put up hurdles to your project? It's happened many times before where people walked away and he used to be honored for this. But I wonder why we haven't learned sooner that the people who are taking those plans in down at City Hall are more of worker ants than a builder and a visionary like Larry, and hard to replace him.
Yeah, Carlene, thanks for the call. What do you think, Heidi?
Yeah, I think you actually touched on some things that I think are very important, and I don't think in today's world in cities like ours, big projects can possibly happen without a partnership with government. And so you need people in government, in leadership positions, who have an understanding of what it's going to take to make a project happen and that are willing to take risks themselves. And that's difficult for people that are protecting, you know, the public side of things, because risk is a tricky business. You don't want to fail. I mean, as we all know, our landscape here is littered with very public failures, and people constantly point to them. Look at the Fast Ferry. Look at Renaissance Square. You know, we just can't do big projects. And so it takes a certain kind of public sector leadership to be willing to step up and partner to do what it takes to set up the environment where private investors can do what they need to do. It's also got to be recognized that people like Larry, and there are others in this game too, they know best what it's going to take to make a project work. I mean, people, you know, sometimes talk about, you know, developers are greedy and everyone's just out to make money and the like. And I have to tell you that the dozens of developers I've worked with, to be crowned, by the way, by Larry Glaser, I wouldn't describe any of them as that way. In fact, if they were really greedy, they wouldn't be doing projects like these because they're hard and because there's risk, a lot of risk. And so these are people that have already a deep belief in rebuilding cities, and ours in particular. But I do think that the issue of partnership with public sector leadership, and we have been, fortunately here, been successful for quite a while now in having that kind of very carefully constructed leadership on both sides that has meant that a lot of these projects have moved forward. And I'll tell you, the Midtown Block never would have moved forward without the leadership that we saw on the city side through several administrations, including this one.
I can't remember how far back it was that they took us through Buckingham Commons when it was sort of the bones of it. And it was, you're walking through going, no way. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm sure you've heard that many times, and you, and they're saying, just wait, just wait.
They can see it.
And
it,
and it's not just this, this is going to succeed, this is going to make money. It's this view of, look at this great building and look what it's going to become again. And I think that's part of Heidi's point. Here's another question from listeners mentioned that your guest said that Larry at one point was going to back out 10 years ago or 15 years ago. He was upset about the direction of the city at the time. What does she think really brought him back?
I think he had an instinctive gut feel about the market, and he knew where to find opportunity. And he proved this in many ways, not just downtown, but in other parts of the city where nobody would touch, abandoned or vacant in former industrial buildings or old manufacturing buildings that just lay vacant on Lyle Avenue or up at the corner of Culver and University, for example. And he just had a feel for how value could be created. And so I really think that's, you know, that's in part why he was as successful as he was, because he could see that.
It seems to me that the city administrations, at least the last several, have had good relationships with him. And now everyone's going to need a little time to process what happens here. Did you know of anything else that, I mean, was there anything in the portfolio that you viewed as undoable without him, or, you know, coming down the pike, you know, that were in development, or was it these big projects we've been talking about?
I think it's the big projects, the ones that at least that I'm aware of. And I do think there was a lot already in motion. There were designs, there were plans and phasing and financing. A lot of things have been put together. What remains a question, and you know, there are others that are closer to this than I am, obviously, is how much was already in place on the Midtown site. That had so many moving parts and was such a brilliant concept and such a large-scale project that I think that's the one that probably has the most questions surrounding it in terms of status and how that will move forward. But, you know, we're just going to have to see. It's going to be a very tough time for our friends at Buckingham Properties, including his two sons that are working with
him. And on that note, Joe writes to us and says, let's not put too much pressure on his family. No one knows what anyone will want to do. And even if they do want to continue the work, Larry was a huge personality. I never met the man, but everything I read said he was getting things done because he was willing it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a pretty broad analysis, Heidi, but I mean, that kind of squares up with what Carlene was asking about. Sometimes it takes a long time for a city to recognize the impact somebody has, and they become kind of a force of personality. Not saying that Larry didn't have the substance. Of course he did, but he had the personality to kind of push a project.
Well, I think, you know, clearly that's what worries people, is that, you know, is there an ability to fill that void? And I really, I guess I remain an optimistic person. We're not going to replace Larry. He's not a replaceable person. I believe the same thing is true, by the way, about Jane Glazer. They were both iconic, one of a kind, very unusual and special people, and they are not replaceable. But I do believe deeply, I'm optimistic, that when you have a void like this, that surprisingly people that sometimes you least expect step up and step into that void. And it would be different, and it may take a slightly different direction. Maybe things will be elongated in terms of process. Maybe the vision will shift some, and that all remains to be seen. But I do think that there was so much laid out in terms of opportunity and motion and momentum from Larry that I don't believe his company or others in the market will shrink from that. So I think we just need to give everybody time. It's a very difficult time, and recognize that we've got some brilliant people involved in this, in that industry, in this community, and in the company, and let them figure out their path, and then, you know, we'll find new people will step in that maybe we hadn't paid so much attention to before. So, I guess, in the end, I think his legacy is going to create a lot of fertility. And it, I guess if I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be in the business I'm in.
Yeah, I know. Heidi is one of the most optimistic people I know. This news has shaken a lot of people. But regardless going forward, their names should be remembered in this community and as long as Rochester is here, don't you think?
I do.
I think you're going to see their names probably. You're probably going to see them memorialized in many ways going forward, too, that those discussions are already in the works. Our thanks to Heidi Zimmermeyer, the president of Rochester Downtown Development Corporation, and to state the very obvious, I wish we were here under different circumstances.
I do, too.
Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you.
Thanks to our listeners, and we'll continue the conversation going forward about Larry and Jane Glazer and the remarkable impact they have had on this community. Short break, and as we come back, next hour, we're going to try to catch our breath and sort of refocus. It's our first Monday simulcasting on WRUR, and we're proud to be on WRUR 88.5 FM in Rochester. Nice to be on the FM side of things there, as well as throughout the Finger Lakes on 89.5 FM. Short break and more on Connections next.